There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you here. Live local talk for the next couple hours. You and I. Phone number, text line. You're going to need it. 343-0106. 343-0106. Coming up in hour number two, going to help you start. Maybe you made it for a New Year's resolution. Maybe it's just summertime. It's got you thinking, you know, not in my best shape. Not just how you look, but you kind of feel slower. You feel like you could lose a few. You could get in better shape. There's a person who has turned this thought process, just the old thought process of getting in shape, on its ear, and that's my buddy Garrett Williamson. He's going to join us. He's with Personal Wedge Fitness. He joins us in the 1 o'clock hour. Lots to talk about with him. Also coming up this hour, AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks is going to join us. Now, you remember Mo Brooks ran for Senate in the special election. He was one of the Republicans in the primary. He is not in here in 2020. But we're going to get his take on the field as it is set now and what he thinks they should expect in this process, as it is not a special election, but the chance for Doug Jones to defend the caretaker role that he's been tied to, right? He's in the caretaker position until a Republican takes back over. We'll have Mo Brooks talk about the Republicans and what they need to do to win, which is like have a pulse, right? We'll talk with him about that. And also, Congressman Brooks is always a very interesting guy to talk to. And I thought it was something last week when, in the cacophony of a saber rattling, Mo Brooks just stepped up and wanted to ask some questions about the U.S. response against Iran in the Gulf of Oman and the Straits of Hormuz and the general region. Now, this was before the drone strike, but there's a lot more to the backstory here we're going to talk with Congressman Brooks about. He's asking questions that I don't hear a lot of people asking. I think it's definitely worth saying. And then this segment right here, before we get in any further, free speech, the question, right? Is that the question? Because I see the Supreme Court. These two stories that I put together in my brain, maybe you did as well. The Supreme Court defended free speech today, even four-letter words. Let me point out to the free speech, to the Supreme Court, that's not how you spell that word. But faced with a clothing line called FUCT, you heard the story there on Westwood One, the justices struck down federal prohibitions against granting trademark protections for immoral or scandalous material as unconstitutional. I would say good for them. Remember the First Amendment, y'all, and this is something that people have trouble with, is not there to protect popular speech. The First Amendment, things that people agree on or aren't really bothered by, those are not things that the First Amendment is there to protect. It's those things that bother us. It's those things that are uncomfortable, we don't like to hear, maybe it could be offensive. I get it. I think a regular guy, I'm a dad, I have children, I get it. But the First Amendment is there to protect unpopular speech, okay? Vote was 6-3 in an opinion written by Elena Kagan, Justice Elena Kagan, Chief Justice John Roberts, and Associate Justice Stephen Breyer and Sonia Sotomayor as the dissents. They said the First Amendment does not allow government to penalize views just because many people, whether rightly or wrongly, see them as offensive. Okay? There's the kind of the quick one-liner from this decision about a clothing line called FUCT. And people say it's offensive, they shouldn't be able to trademark this. Well, they defend the First Amendment there. Supreme Court says this is protected speech. Okay, you don't have to like it, but it's protected speech. All right, so with that standing there, there's a national story, right? I'll pop this up on the Twitter feed. You can check it out there. But I think it's an interesting story to put with this one. They just finished up 11 o'clock this morning at the Mobile County Commission meeting with a protest about what the Mobile County Treasurer said about homosexuals, right? The freaking queers line. Now, while that speech bothers me, I think is offensive to a lot of people, I wouldn't choose that line. Does having the elected position of being the treasurer prevent you from, in time, where you're not on the job, okay? I think if he was doing it in the capacity of the county treasurer, might be questionable. But away from his job, now you can vote him out, but does there need to be a law to tell people that are elected that they can't say things like that on a Facebook thing? I mean, this is somewhat as a naivete of saying something on Facebook and not thinking it's going to come up somewhere else. But I would point out, too, that Phil Benson has not backed down from his statements. But it's unpopular speech, isn't it? It's unpopular speech. Well, this unpopular speech is what the Supreme Court protected with this FUCT clothing brand. And I would argue that is the spirit of what would protect the unpopular speech of this county treasurer. Now, nobody else is saying that. County commissioners are coming out. I got a memo from Connie Hudson, I guess, at the end of last week. I know we had some comment from Commissioner Carl as well. And I'm not applauding what he said. I wouldn't talk like that. But in his private life, does he have the ability to say that? Once again, whether it's a Supreme Court decision or what just happened here with the protest at the county commission. By the way, same protesters. I think there were 24 LGBTQ protesters, and they're supposed to go to Mobile City Council meeting tomorrow. Can you say that in both cases, First Amendment is not here to protect popular speech? Whether you have a tacky name, a tacky on the edge of being a dirty word, right, that I think, you know, it's probably used about 800 times every second in this country and in our music and our movies and all that. But this clothing line is got the right to use this tacky word in a kind of a past tense joke there. Is that not the same First Amendment that protects the county treasurer of Mobile County? Both cases, unpopular, not what you like, not what you want to hear. But in both cases, are we not asking a question about First Amendment? All right. Coming back, and we'll talk about that on the text line at 343-0106. Coming back, AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks. Like I said, it's always interesting. I enjoyed hearing him talk last week about the situation in the Middle East. I'll get his take on the situation as it is today now, after what has happened, and what didn't happen, and also what might be next. As we say, whose responsibility is it to deal with the Iranians? I think that's a fair question to talk about. We'll do that with Congressman Brooks. And also, I want to get his take on Senate 2020. The man has good insight into it, and we'll do it next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1217 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And text line open at 343-0106, 343-0106. Remember last week I played that clip from this would have been Thursday, I think. He can correct me on it in a second. I think it was Thursday when AL5's Congressman Mo Brooks was talking about the situation in the Strait of Hormuz, Gulf of Oman, and shipping lanes in that area at that point. Now, a lot more has been added to that story since then, but I want to go back to that and go forward with it as well as we say hello to Congressman Mo Brooks. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Always good to have you on. And let's talk about last week when you were giving your testimony there on the floor of the House and explaining that maybe this situation half a world away may be the responsibility of some other players, not just the United States.
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. There are a lot of different factors,
right?
But if the only factor is whether the United States of America should engage in a military attack on Iran because of the six tankers that had holes blew into their hulls. That should not be the primary responsibility of the United States of America, okay? The ships weren't ours. They were Norwegian, or they were Japanese, or they were Saudi Arabian, or whomever. The product being shipped was not ours. It was oil produced in either United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabia. And then the purchasers of that oil, well, at least with respect to the two ships that had cargo at that time, that also was not ours. If I recall correctly, that's Taiwan and Singapore. So those countries, they all have national security interest in the production of that oil or the consumption of that oil or the ownership of those tankers. And as such, they should be the ones that have the primary responsibility of trying to defend those shipping lanes in the Persian Gulf, not the United States of America. And there are plenty of nations that fit that bill, by the way, that are heavily reliant on that oil. It might be China. It might be Japan. It might be South Korea. It might be Western Europe. But if all these countries that have a greater national security interest in the Persian Gulf shipping lanes are not themselves willing to defend their own interests, well, the United States should not do it for them.
But there we are, right? We, a month ago or something, sent a naval detachment here, a battleship group, into the region to plus up the people that were already there. And it led to a situation that last week was extremely tense, I still think is, with the Iranians shooting down a drone of ours, $130-180 million expensive drone, and then everybody waiting for the response from the United States. Now, we are, you know, we were in that situation because exactly what you said. These people didn't take it up on their own. We did. Now we have had a direct conflict with the Iranians.
No question. That's still a complicated issue, though. The United States, the United Kingdom say that Iran was responsible for shooting down the drone, and that the drone was over international international airspace, and therefore it was an illegal act of war type conduct by the Iranians. On the other hand, the Iranians deny that the drone was in international airspace the entire time that it was conducting surveillance, and the international community is basically unwilling at this point in time to take a position on who was right and who was wrong. But even if Iran was wrong in shooting down the drone, then you get into the issue of what was their intent. And intent is also very important. If it was an accident where they in good faith believed that the drone was in international airspace, that's one kind of conduct. On the other hand, if they knew that they were wrong, that the drone was in international airspace, they had no right to shoot it down, and they shot it down anyways, that is evidence of a much different situation where the United States needs to be more aggressive. So I guess the general thrust of all this is that this whole issue is a whole lot more complicated than you might see if you don't think it all the way through. And I'm glad the President of the United States decided to take more time and to ponder all of his options before engaging in a military counterstrike against Iran. I'll give you another one. Consequences. If we attack Iran, what are the consequences going to be? One of the things we would like to see in Iran is for there to be a regime change. Certainly, that's what these economic sanctions are designed to help promote. If we attack Iran or any country's attack, what is the normal immediate outcome of that attack? Rallying around the flag, trying to stop those outsiders. Mm-hmm. So we might actually could reinforce the posture of the Iranian regime in Iran by attacking Iran, and that might be what the Iranian regime wants, is to try to spur an attack by outside forces so that they'll be less likely to be toppled from within. So it might be that being cautious is the best way to help ensure that we facilitate a change in regimes in Iran such that we have one in Iran that will be much friendlier to the international community, a much better neighbor than it has proven itself to be over the last couple of decades.
See y'all why I think Congressman Brooks is so brilliant, because that's exactly this morning I said, you know, if we, and I thought it was great that the president took maybe option C with this, and you know, and that says a lot when you, and I'm not going to pick fights, but when you have John Bolton as a part of the administration in your ear, it takes a lot of pushing back to not get in a conflict at, you know, the first minute. But I this morning I said, if, like you said, if we want to, if the end goal is to have the Iranians act a little bit better as a world player, to do what they said they were going to do in this treaty, if we were going to have them step up, it seems to be better to make that come from the people that are sick of the issues with the sanctions and their lifestyle being degraded. If we hit a missile installation, a radar installation, and kill some Revolutionary Guard members, that galvanizes their support for their leadership and brings up their nationalism versus having them question who's in charge.
That's one of the factors you have to take into play. And you've also got two different theories on how to respond. One is punch them in the nose so hard that they won't dare try it again. That was the approach that Ronald Reagan used with Muammar Gaddafi when we were putting missiles in his tent. Then you've got the other argument, which is called proportionality, where you try to keep the counterattack at the same level as the attack. So in this instance, the Iranians attacked us, and we had no loss of life, rather we had loss of a piece of equipment. And so the proportionality argument is you don't kill any Iranians, you come back and you do significant property damage, about $150 million worth of property damage to something that's important to them. And it could be a military target, such as missile defense systems, radar systems,
right?
Or it could be something like a refinery or an oil pipeline. That is internal to Iran that really causes great discomfort within Iran itself and their population by inhibiting their ability to transport oil to their own citizenry.
And to me, that would elicit, just a guess at this point, I don't, you know, obviously I don't have the briefings you do and people in Washington, but just where I sit from a realpolitik situation, you could, there's at least an argument to be made that the best way to regime change, heck, they tried it with the Green Revolution a little bit, is to squeeze them on the lifestyle of the Iranian people and maybe get them to change something there versus galvanizing their support and their nationalism for Iran by striking them. That can fix one thing, but if we believe there's any chance of having the people rise up, maybe the play going on right now is the right one.
You're spot on.
Right. I want to talk about the what's next part of this, though, because the president has talked about reserving the right. I think that's great to be able to act. As we talk about this cyber warfare going on as well. What do you see in that region? You talk about the United States and the United Kingdom, the only two that said for sure their belief that the drone was in international waters and the Iranians were out. So if we launch something, if you're going to get a coalition of the willing, at this point, who would be on our team?
Well, if we don't have international support, we should not do it unless there is a huge national security interest. And you've got that possibility if Iran is able to develop nuclear weapons and marry them to missile systems that can reach the United States. That's a whole different ball game, because the Iranian leadership has made it clear that they are willing to sacrifice themselves if they can take out the little Satan, Israel, and the big Satan, the United States of America, with them. And that's a dangerous, dangerous mentality. It's much different than what we've seen with, say, China or the Soviet Union, now Russia, or even North Korea. It's much different than what you see between Pakistan and India, both of whom have engaged in military conflict, both of whom have nuclear weapons, the premise being mutually assured destruction doctrine, where if you attack me, we destroy you, you don't want to commit suicide, we don't want to all die, so as a consequence, you don't have nuclear weapons being used by one party against the other. But if you've got a regime like Iran that is doing it out of religious motivations, their fundamentalist Islamic views, then that's big if they're willing to die in order to take out the United States of America and Israel. That's a whole different dynamic, and the mutually assured destruction doctrine that has kept peace between India and Pakistan. It doesn't work. It's kept peace between America and the Soviet Union and China and North Korea. That doesn't work.
Yeah, it only works in a secular framework, right? I mean, that's the only place it works.
Pretty much. Well,
a non-extremist. Let me say this, a non-extremist.
Don't want to die.
Yeah, a non-extremist, exactly. Just joining us, talking to AL5's Congressman Bo Brooks. Has been a friend of the show and on with us throughout the years. Good to have him back. All right, I want to talk about, before we go to the break, because we come back, I want to talk get your take of the Senate 2020 race. But beforehand, more going on in Washington. So, help me. I wanted your reaction. I would have loved to have been the fly on the wall there when you first heard of Senator Sanders saying, hey, Elizabeth Warren says she's going to forgive $680 billion in student debt. I'm over a trillion. How about that, audience? I'm going over a trillion. I'm forgiving all of it.
That's okay. This is the way the Democrats set up the framework for their entire election process. Who would you rather elect, Santa Claus or the Grinch? The bottom line, though, is since they're borrowing all this money, since we don't have it, long-term, that Santa Claus costume they're wearing hides the true Grinch that is underneath, because ultimately we are going to have a national debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy that will do great damage to our country that's taken two centuries to build. And the American people have to get smart enough to look behind that Santa Claus costume and see what's really underneath. But to date, I'm scared. Yeah. I'm fearful that the American people are not properly discerning what the Democrats are up to with all these giveaway programs and what the ultimate outcome is and the damage that would be done to our country.
Well, if you just vote on pragmatism with no idealism, no adherence to what made our nation great, and no fiscal awareness, you might be suckered by this.
A vast number of voters are suckered, as witnessed by who they elect to the United States Congress. Look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez by way of example. Look at Ilhan Omar. Look at Rashid Tlaib. Look at Bernie Sanders. Just go down the list. These policies are dangerous to our country's future, yet the public continues to elect people who have that ideology.
Well said. Coming right back, more with Congressman Mo Brooks. Get your text as well at 343-0106.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
By 1235, FM Talk 1065. Welcome back to Midday Mobile. And our conversation with Congressman Mo Brooks, AL5, who is at this point also pinch hitting as our sportscaster in the midday. Congressman Brooks, how's it looking for USA and Spain?
It has been tough. At the 75-minute mark, tied 1-1, but we just kicked a penalty kick at the 76-minute mark, so we're up by one with 14 minutes left. Spain has played really, really aggressively, very physical, very well, and America's been pressed.
I have a feeling our team, they've been fantastic, knock on wood, pull this through. For sure. I appreciate the update. Though, yeah, at any time during the game, the score changes, please let us know during our conversation. Hey, you said
we'll
to me,
do. We'll do.
You said to me during the news break, you and I are chatting. You said, Sean, there are four major battles out there for our republic. And you said that you feel the Democrats are winning them and the Republicans are losing them. What are those?
The four main battles that our country faces are deficit and debt. We cannot afford a national insolvency and bankruptcy. But, of course, that's exactly where we're headed, and I can go into the reasons for all that more, if you wish. A second one is border security. That is fundamental to a nation being a nation, and if we lose that battle, that's going to be a huge gain for the Democrats in future elections and for the socialist wing of the Democratic Party, and it will hurt us on deficit and debt because about 70% or so of all households with illegal aliens in them are on welfare. They're living off the hard-earned dollars of American taxpayers. A third one is the battle between free enterprise and socialism. Free enterprise works. Socialism doesn't. Free enterprise is real simple. It's based on liberty. Socialism is based on government dictate and the deprivation of liberty. And the worst extremes of socialism were seen with the National Socialist Workers Party of Germany in the 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s that ultimately resulted in over 50 million losing their lives. In China, with Mao Zedong, when he took over in the 40s and 50s with the cultural revolutions that ensued, where tens of millions were killed by their own government as a part of the imposition of socialism and government dictate and the deprivation of freedom and liberty. And then another country, Soviet Union, when that country went socialist, again, tens of millions of Russia's own people were murdered by their government. Those were the people that believed in freedom. And of course, that's the exact opposite of socialism. Then finally, moral values. It's one thing to be a great nation. It's another thing to do good things with the power that you have. And the Democrats are doing everything they possibly can to undermine moral values. That's four for four. We've got to win on those. But unfortunately, the public is being deceived. They're being tricked. They're being sold a bill of goods. And we need to do better nationally. A whole lot better than we have been.
Well, and it goes back to the first one you said. We can put that today with the story I asked you before we went to the break with this, who's going to forgive more debt? You know, now Bernie's upping it to over a trillion dollars, one point something trillion dollars. This is going to be this is a sign of just Santa Claus, as you said, or whatever, but this is a socialist system because the money has to come from somewhere else, right? I mean, where does the money come from?
The bill has to be paid, no question. And either the people who own their own voluntarily decided to borrow that money are going to pay it, or the American people are going to be stuck with the tab. And we cannot afford it. We've got $22 trillion in debt. This year we're looking at a deficit of somewhere in the neighborhood of $800 billion to $1 trillion. And every deficit after this one, according to the Congressional Budget Office, is projected to be worse and worse and worse, capping at about $1.4 trillion a decade from now. And it's just impossible to sustain.
What?
Eventually, you have a national insolvency and bankruptcy that would undoubtedly result in the loss of a million American lives, as you no longer have money for food stamps that we've made people dependent on. No longer have money for Social Security and Medicare, where elderly aren't able to make ends meet. They're not able to get the health care. No longer have housing for people that we've made dependent on housing. It can be very dangerous. And you can look at Venezuela to get a pretty good example of where it all ends up.
Why aren't there more people? I've asked you this many times. I'm going to do it again. Why aren't there more Mo Brooks? Why aren't there more people talking about this in Washington or Alabama?
Hey, it's a lot easier to win elections just by telling folks you're going to give them free stuff.
There it is.
Much easier to win elections under those circumstances.
It's
harder to try to help people understand that we can't be everybody's sugar daddy, that we don't have enough money to do that for everyone.
So how do we do that?
People don't like being told, no, we can't give you more free stuff. You got to earn it.
But it's education.
There's too many loafers.
Yeah, but it's education. The people have to know that they have to see that the emperor has no clothes, right, when told this.
They have to, and that's one of the advantages and benefits of having radio talk show hosts like yours, like you and yours, your show. It helps people better understand what the truth is and what the consequences will be if we do not adhere to sound public policy.
Hopefully we get that education because, that to me on the number one is the only antidote, right? The only antidote to this is people realizing it's the nation can't afford it. They themselves will pay for it. And it's just further hastening the decline of our republic to say, okay, we'll give you all this. And then everybody gets something. Then the next person is going to have to promise more money, Congressman. And I'll give you $2 billion. I'm going to forgive debt you didn't even pay. I'm just going to send you some money if you ever got near a campus.
Well, I'll give you an example of how voters have to be smart. I understand that a lot of people did not like Roy Moore for whatever reasons. They did not like Roy Moore in 2017. But in terms of who is going to vote right on the big things that are facing our country, on Supreme Court justices who will not make law, rather they will fulfill their role as justices and abide by their oaths as justices by interpreting law and applying the law that our elected officials have put in the books, whether it be in the form of the Constitution or federal statutes, whether who is going to vote better on open borders or border security, okay? Who is going to vote better on moral values, on being pro-life and saving the lives of unborn children? Who is going to vote better on socialism versus free enterprise? Who is going to vote better on deficit and debt? It's clear that Roy Moore was going to vote better in the United States Senate, that Roy Moore better reflected Alabama values in the United States Senate, but yet the Democrats are able to pull the wool over our eyes in cooperation with the mainstream news media, do a Kavanaugh thing, and have a bunch of people last second where you don't have time to figure out what the truth is, make accusations that could have been made months earlier where we'd had more time to collect the evidence and figure out whether people are lying or telling the truth. But, so we've got to do much better if we're going to keep this republic.
Yeah, and in the general, you're saying it, but I mean, you believe other people could have done a better job on the Republican side because, I mean, you ran in that primary.
Yes.
I mean, you think you could do a better job.
And there were some bad decisions made by Mitch McConnell in the establishment wing of the Republican Party in Washington, D.C., where they ran millions upon millions of dollars in fake attack ads against me, the purpose being to send conservative voters from my campaign to Roy Moore's campaign based on the belief of the Luther Strange crowd that Roy Moore would be easier to beat in a runoff. And their strategy in the primary was successful. It did move voters from my campaign, my candidacy, to Roy Moore, but they made a big mistake in that they were supporting a candidate who had major weaknesses, and that candidate lost to Roy Moore, who ultimately lost to Doug Jones, in large part because establishment Republicans refused to do what was in the best interest of our country. When you look at how senators were actually going to vote, which is the primary job of senators.
Correct. Okay, then let's talk about this next part. You are not in for this 2020 cycle, but you are not backing Roy Moore. Who are you backing?
Well, my first choice is someone who's not very well known, but he has intellect. He has a backbone of steel. His name is Arnold Mooney. He's a state legislator from Shelby County, and I have absolute confidence that Arnold Mooney will vote right on deficit and debt issues, that he will vote right on border security issues, that he will vote right on moral values issues, and he will vote right on border security issues. And I can't say that about everybody, but I can say that about Arnold Mooney. So he's my preference, even though he is an underdog at the current time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at what some of the polls out there say, everybody but Tuberville and Moore are the underdogs in this. You know, that's pretty much the choice as it stands. What do you think about that? There's been some polls out, there have been several polls out that have have Tommy Tuberville leading and have Roy Moore a close second.
Well, we have a lot of really good candidates. It's almost like a kid in an ice cream shop where you only have enough money to buy one scoop. And which one are you going to get when you have so many choices, all of whom are good? And in my judgment, we're going to have a half dozen really good people who ultimately would make fine United States senators. And let me add that I have the greatest degree of confidence that whoever our nominee is, and I prefer Arnold Mooney, other people prefer other candidates, I get that. But whoever our nominee is going to win this time. Any of the people who are running will win, and they'll win for two reasons. Number one, you're going to have Trump leading the ticket, and people are not going to be staying home. They're not going to fall for this voter suppression tactic of the Democratic Party on the one hand and some of our own establishment Republicans on the other hand. And two, Doug Jones is not going to be able to fool people into thinking that he is a moderate. He is not a moderate. He is an extreme leftist, And his voting record there is now for all to see. And so that was not there previously, but it is there now. And that's gonna, those two things, those will be big difference makers. So whomever we nominate is going to win. The key then is for us in the Republican primary to nominate someone who will not shirk in the face of tremendous temptation to do the wrong thing in Washington rather than the right thing.
What about a name that's been there before, and I have not heard anything, zero official, from the camp of former Senator Jeff Sessions, but what if he got in? Does he win the field? Do people pack up and go home?
If Jeff Sessions runs, in my judgment, he immediately starts out as the front runner. He was an excellent, excellent United States Senator on all the main issues that I've been focusing on, as good as you can get, not only voting correctly, but also taking a leadership role verbally to help the public understand what we should be doing on these issues and why it's in the best interest of our country to be doing those things on these issues. Now, does he clear the field? Probably not, but I don't know. I'm not one of the candidates. I don't know. I can't speak for any candidates to where they stay in if Jeff Sessions gets in. And it will be a little bit harder for Jeff this go around because of the things that happened while he was Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
But gosh, he's not running. He would not be running for Attorney General. He'd be running for United States Senate, where he was a pleasure to work with and did an excellent job.
Absolutely. Congressman Brooks, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll get you back on the show very soon. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. And keep up the good work. Our country needs it.
Hey, thank you. Congressman Mo Brooks, AL5, always a treat to have on the show. All right, come back, grab some calls, and text at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. You can grab those calls and text at 343-0106, 343-0106. Chuck says on the text line, what about the billions of dollars the United States gives away as foreign aid every year? We are the world's sugar daddy. Y'all pick and choose what the U.S. can and cannot afford to spend. Chuck, I would go back and check Mo Brooks' record. That's what I'm saying. That's why he's interesting to me, because Mo Brooks is not one that follows down a punch card list. He's a conservative guy, a solid Republican guy, but he's also a guy that does not... He's more of the constitutional vein. And so, Chuck, to double check that, he has pushed back against those increases and really the status quo of foreign aid packages. Okay? So that's, yeah, do this. So Steve says $1.9 trillion increase in federal budget deficit over 10 years due to the tax cut, according to the Congressional Budget Office. So for revenue, what I think Steve's saying is the revenue not coming into the federal budget. Of course, you play the old game there. What is it? You grow the economy in an entirety and you get more revenue in than where, if you get $1.9 trillion as the economy sits on day one, you do a tax cut and increase the size of the economy, you can make that money back with a bigger economy. That's another show, another hour that's fun stuff to talk about. I do like it. Now, Steve, you and I may have to talk about it on the phone because everybody else will get bored, but be a fun conversation. This text here, let's see. My wife and I paid for college ourselves, both with a BA, and took 6 years instead of four. Why are we paying for people's voluntary choices? We chose not to have debt. If other people choose debt, then they should pay their debt. That's what a lot of people are saying out there. This, believe me, here's the point. I think something has to be done. They have to look at what's going on with the cost of tuition. I've lamented that many times on the air. The fact is that what my nephews paid at the University of Alabama, let's say 20 years after I was a student in the early 90s, and I was paying $1,200, $1,300 a semester, and by the time they were there, it was five, six times that, maybe more. Was that degree they received worth more than five or six times the degree I received? I would argue that it wasn't. So, I mean, it's a fair question. John says, so So what value is the value of a college degree when there's no sweat equity in it? Man, it's like you took my notes, John. I had note to myself today. If we do this, does it make college become just like high school, you know, high school 2.0? I mean, is that what it becomes? He said, whatever happened to the belief that college was the institute of higher education? You worked hard in high school to be able to get into college. He said, I would give every person that joined our military for a minimum of 2 years free college for the number of years they served, a much better commitment. There you go. All right. And to the phones, let's go to David in Mobile. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean. I actually agree with the congressman that we need to cut federal spending to cut our deficit spending. And we need to tell people the government can't be their sugar daddy anymore. But my question for the congressman is this. Does that mean we also need to tell Boeing and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon, all of who have locations in the congressman's district and have donated to his campaigns in the past, that we can't be their sugar daddy anymore?
I'm sure if he was forced into that, he'd probably say yes. He'd probably say yes, but he's got to, you know, he's going to say, well, my job is to AL5 and then to the nation, right?
And see, therein lies the problem.
Sure.
Is we all serve our own districts, and there's nothing wrong with that because we elect our congressmen.
That's reality,
to represent
man.
Our area.
Yeah.
That's what their job is to do. But if you're not willing to at least compromise with that and put some of that aside for the betterment of the entire country, we end up back where we're at now.
Yeah, so but what do we do here in the case of, for example, here's the thing. If you promise, and you're completely on the level, on the measure with that. But at the same time, if the game is, I'm going to promise you things to get you to vote for me. What was it, de Tocqueville that said, and I'm a horrible butchered paraphrase here, but when the citizens realize they can vote themselves treasure from the treasury or treasure from the government, Republicans doomed to fail. And that is a hack job on the de Tocqueville quote, but something to that effect. That's what happens when you have Elizabeth Warren saying, well, we'll do $680 billion in forgiveness. No. Bernie says, I'll do $1.3 trillion. Somebody else can say, no, I'll do $2 trillion. I'm going to do even more.
Well, we have certainly been living in the age of de Tocqueville for the last several decades, and it's not just Trump doing it. It's not just Obama. It's been going all the way back to even Ronald Reagan that did it as well. So I agree with you there. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of people who the government is their sugar daddy that are going to get their feelings hurt if and when the time comes we have to do austerity measures because we can't afford our bills anymore.
There we go. David, appreciate the call. Thomas is in Theodore. Hey, Thomas.
Good afternoon, Sean. I don't want to say anything. David made excellent PowerPoints. I don't want to destroy it by saying something goofy. Mo Brooks was a great interview. Also, Peter Rusciutti that you had on from Tulane University, they could go in tandem with their way of thinking. And I enjoyed both those interviews. Very good.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad, Thomas. Glad you liked it. Yeah, it's the number one. I enjoy those conversations. I know that it bucks the trend of where a lot of talk radio goes. It just reinforces. You just get here's the main idea, and then you just retrace. And it doesn't always have to be this idea of, well, here's a Democrat idea, here's a Republican idea. Within conservatives, there's a lot of difference. And I would argue that what the movement that has taken this nation is actually a populist movement. Not a conservative movement. So there's a lot of places that I can, put the mirror up to populism and show it conservatism, and they don't match. Now, a lot of places they match, but some places they don't. And a lot of people will argue that, populism's what the nation needs. Okay, make that argument. That's fine. That's an argument that's at some level could be made by the Democrats, too. It's a different version of populism, but it's still a populist argument. Yeah, so Steve said, Bernie says he's going to pay for it by taxing Wall Street. Right, so we talked about it this morning. Taxing Wall Street speculation. And he makes the emotional argument, Steve. It's the brilliance of the emotional Democrat argument that he says, look what we did when we bailed out Wall Street in 2007. And I'm with him because I was PO'd then too. We had all the TARP measures. And I said, we just need to rip the Band-Aid off and get this cleared and move forward. But we didn't do that. Through a real streak of Keynesian economics going on around here. We didn't do that. So Bernie's going to have this argument that we're going to make Wall Street pay for these folks' tuition because of the situation that put those people in. And they did. Wall Street, people lost homes. People didn't have job options because of what traders did on Wall Street. But you should have taken and you should have exacted the measure. You should have exacted the pound of flesh then, not now, in some circumvented way down the road punishment. Now we're going to tax Wall Street. Well, what do you do when you tax Wall Street? Oh, yeah, that's like those people that are trying to get back on their feet that have jobs because of companies that are traded on Wall Street, or little old ladies that have their investment and their life savings invested with these Wall Street companies. I mean, short-sighted and an emotional argument for sure. All right, we're talking fitness when we get back. My buddy Gary Williamson joins us next.